This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
All right, so we are feeling a little ambitious today, feeling a little frisky. We are taking on the task of defining 66 tri terms that every triathlete should know. Even in accumulating this list, that there are things I feel like I left out, I tried thinking through what terms did I not know when I first started in triathlon. It is a heck of a list, and so I've got a heck of a panel here to help us. Our first TriDot coach on the episode is professional triathlete Elizabeth James. Elizabeth is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, how's it going?
You know, Andrew, things are busy, but in the best way. We are well into tri season, and it just seems like every weekend is full of excitement.
Yeah, so true.
So I love this time of year. It's busy, but it is fantastic.
Yep, so true. We were definitely tracking tons of TriDot athletes at various races over the weekend. Also here with us is TriDot coach Joanna Namy. Joanna is better known as Coach JoJo and has coached athletes with TriDot since 2012. She's a co-founder of Hissy Fit Racing, a member of the Betty Design Elite Squad, and keeps adding Ironman finishes to her over 20 now, I think, accomplished triathlon resume. Coach Joe now serves as the director of TriDot Pool School. Coach Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. I'm excited to be here with you and Elizabeth and Jeff and to have lots of laughs and be very informative today.
Lots of laughs, lots of information. Also with us is Coach Jeff Rains. Jeff is a USAT Level 2, an Ironman U certified coach, and a TriDot Master Coach who has a Master of Science in Exercise Physiology and was a D1 collegiate runner. He has over 60 Ironman event finishes to his credit and has coached hundreds of athletes to the Ironman finish line. Jeff has been training and coaching with TriDot since 2015. Welcome, Jeff.
This is going to be a fun one, Andrew. Things triathletes say, man, this could get wild today.
I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up questions, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with Vanessa interviewing a different coach for a coach cooldown tip on the cooldown. Triathletes and cyclists love talking about their bikes, and I, of course, am no exception. I am so impressed by the quality of my Diamond Marquee TT bike. Every detail has been carefully engineered and crafted by the team at Diamond Bikes. My Marquee, complete with a custom TriDot paint scheme, sits proudly on the set of the TriDot Triathlon YouTube show for our audience to see. Their bikes are industry-leading aerodynamic machines, and they look awesome. But even beyond that, Diamond as a brand knows how to take care of their athletes. And with five different tri-bike models, as well as road, gravel, and mountain bikes, your next bike should absolutely be a Diamond. TriDot and Diamond are a dynamic race day 1-2 punch. Diamond provides you with a Ferrari of bikes, and TriDot Training develops your engine. So we are excited to partner with Diamond on some really cool offers. If you are a new to TriDot athlete, we're offering 6 months of the Mark Allen edition of TriDot with the purchase of a Diamond bike. If you are already a TriDot athlete, we are offering a TriDot store credit with your new bike. Head to diamondbikes.com for all of the info and to dream up your very own Diamond bike. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
We all have food habits that are relatively normal, like dipping chips in the salsa or putting mustard on a hot dog. But then we all have that one super weird thing that we do that causes the people around us to look at us like we are from another planet. For our warm-up question today, what is your weirdest food habit? And as a bonus, if you want to, you can totally throw a loved one under the bus with you. What is an additional weird food habit of a friend or family member? Jeff Rains.
Easy, ranch dressing. I put ranch dressing on everything, and I have even been known to carry around a bottle of ranch dressing just in case I'm out somewhere and they don't have ranch dressing or they're out. I put it on my tuna. I put it on my hot dogs. I put it on everything. So I'm that guy. I also, you know, I like pineapple on my pizza. I'm like one of those little old ladies who, like, you ask for, like, the weirdest thing. Hey, anybody got a hammer? I don't know. And then, you know, they'll pull it out of their purse because they have everything in their purse. Well, me, it's like my phone, wallet, keys, and ranch dressing. Done.
In your purse?
No. Scratch that. Thanks, JoJo. Oh, man. It's going to be one of those kind of episodes. I'm ready. I'm ready for Joe.
Oh, yeah. What you can't see is Joanna and I just laughing. It's like, we could have answered that question for you. What's weird about Jeff's food intake? Ranch dressing. Absolutely. Yes. Every staff trip, he's like, can I get a set of ranch with that? No matter what he orders.
Yeah, no, I've seen that one as well. And I mean, I do feel like there's enough people that that's their weird food thing. They do ranch and everything, that in itself isn't weird. And so I'm glad you gave us a few examples. Like ranch dressing on a hot dog, that is weird, objectively. Sorry. So, thanks for the tangible example. I was going to follow up asking that. Moving this one on to Coach Joanna Namy.
Oh, my kids think it's disgusting. I didn't think this was weird. I thought maybe everybody did this, but I've eaten the same breakfast for like 20 years, and I put an egg and egg whites in my oatmeal in the microwave, and it smells funny, I guess. And the kids say that I'm disgusting, but it's really good because we have to beef up our protein intake. And then the podcast where I mentioned the lobster and beet snack
beets
from the refrigerator has gotten a lot of comments.
As it should. I have a clarifying question, Joe. So you cook eggs, you put eggs in oatmeal, and then you microwave the whole thing, or you put raw eggs in your oatmeal, microwave
the oatmeal? I put raw eggs in it. And if you cook it for...
And then the eggs are microwaved along with the oatmeal.
Yes, if you cook it for 2 minutes and 45 seconds, it's perfect.
I just threw up a little bit.
Hot diggity dog.
I threw up when you...
Hot diggity dog.
Well,
that's
Jeff,
weird.
I threw up when you said ranch dressing and tuna. I
don't even think... I might could put ranch dressing on top of that oatmeal with eggs and drown it out as long as it tastes... No, I can't. I couldn't do it. I still couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Elizabeth James, what do you got here?
Well, the one thing that came to mind for me, and again, maybe kind of along the lines like Joanna said, I don't think it's that weird, but, you know, it's me doing it. I eat salad kits right out of the bag, and I did this almost every day while teaching. I mean, I'd heat up some chicken in the microwave, dump it into the salad bag, eat lunch right out of the bag. To me, that was just smart. You know, it saved dishes.
I just think it's practical,
But, man, practical. The other teachers in the teacher's lounge would just frequently joke about me and, like, my bag lunches. And maybe it was just more, like, the quantity of it versus anything else, just sitting there eating a whole bag of salad. But that's the only thing that came to mind. I was asking my husband, too. I was like, what do I do that's so weird? And he's like, well, I don't know. You eat kind of boring. So he didn't really have a good answer for me either. So I'm going with the salad bags.
My answer here, I've outgrown this one, but kind of like you, Elizabeth, I was trying to think of something that was truly weird. When I was a young 20 something and I was trying to start working more vegetables into my diet, frankly, I was eating carrots out of the little carrot bag out of the refrigerator. And now I eat my carrots just straight. I don't dip them in ranch or anything like Jeff Rains. But back in my 20s, I was never a big ranch guy. And so I would dip my carrots into Chick-fil-A sauce. Yeah, I grew out of that one. We're going to throw this question out to you, our audience. I know there's something in the back of your head as we've been talking. You're like, yep, I got something lined up that I can share. I'm going to throw this question out on the I Am Trot Facebook group. What is a weird food habit that you or a loved one has? Let us know in the comments.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
We've had sports scientist Andy Blow from Precision Fuel and Hydration on the show quite a few times to help you nail your hydration and fueling strategy for training and racing. We've learned from Andy that you'll need to replace a portion of your carb, electrolyte, and fluid losses with what you eat and drink if you want to perform at your best. So Andy and the team at Precision Fuel and Hydration have developed a fuel planner so that you can take the guesswork out of your race nutrition plan. Head over to precisionfuelandhydration.com to take the fuel planner and get your free personalized race nutrition strategy. You can then book a call with PFNH's athlete support team to refine your strategy. And don't forget that TriDot listeners can get 10% off their very first order of electrolytes and fueling products by using the code TRY23 at the checkout at precisionfuelandhydration.com. With most sports, there is a certain lingo that pairs exclusively with participating in that physical activity, and triathlon is no exception. There are terms that can help a triathlete navigate training, racing, and existing within the multi-sport universe. And today we're going to identify and explain 66 terms, 66 of them that we here at TriDot feel athletes should know. Now, some of these will be no-brainers to a veteran triathlete. Others might be a bit deeper and a bit more obscure, but we've got a lot of them. So let's buckle up and see what you can learn from the conversation today. Now, Joe, EJ, Jeff, I'm going to do my best to really keep us moving today. 66 terms to get through. But before we hit our list of tri terms, I'm curious to hear, when you first got started in triathlon, what was a term that you did not know that you distinctly remember the moment that you learned it? Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah, I've got this one ready to go. Crack pipe. This was at Galveston Camp 2017.
Sure.
And I seriously thought the athlete that was asking me if I had a crack pipe was asking for drugs. I mean, talk about like an embarrassing and awkward moment. I had no idea what they were talking about. I didn't understand the whole like crack pipe for the disc wheel. And I tell you what, that was awkward.
All right. Yep. Yep. Jeff Rains, what about you?
You know, the clip-on shoes, like I know it seems simple enough, but I thought that was like a negative thing. Like you have a clip-on tie or like clip-on earrings. Like it's like fake or bad. And I was a new triathlete and they're like, have you got clip-on shoes yet? And I'm like,
why,
no.
Why would
like,
I do that?
I'm so dumb.
I'm the real
like, I don't want like, exactly. And finally it was at my first try. I was doing the shoes and the stirrup things. And I was like, yeah, these are the stirrups. And they're like, well, get your clip-on shoes. And I was like, oh, like it finally clicked.
Yeah.
Clicked like, anyways.
Joanna
now
Amy.
I know.
Joanna and Amy, what about you?
I think I was doing like a practice try. This was like 20 years ago at the in Pearland, Texas. And it was for the YMCA. And I can't remember if we had a flat or what went on with a group of us. And a guy's like, well, SAG's coming. And I was like, SAG? Is that the cops? And I was like, I played it off. I was like, yeah, SAG, they're coming. I had no idea what that meant. And then, you know, felt stupid.
No, I'm glad you said, actually, why don't you, that's not on my list of 66. So tell us what SAG is.
SAG is someone that's appointed, a vehicle that would be appointed to assist if anybody got in trouble or needed help during a ride. You'll often see them on, organized group rides or enduring races. You know, that's one of the number one questions I get from athletes during Ironman or half Ironman races. Is there going to be SAG? Is there going to be somebody that could help me if I had a problem?
Yep, gotcha.
And it stands for support and gear.
Ooh.
SAG, SAG, support and gear, I believe is the...
We are learning already. So mine that I'm going to share here, and this actually is in my list of 66, so we can kind of go ahead and cross it off right now. I did not know, I never heard of the flying mount. And so I heard more experienced athletes talking about, oh, you're new to the sport, you should learn how to do a flying mount. And so I learned what that was. I saw what it was. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to start off with that. That seems like a veteran move. I realized that. The flying mount is obviously when you... get on the bike and then get off the bike in T1 and T2. You jump onto the bike while the bike's in motion, you jump off the bike while the bike is in motion, and you kind of figure out how to shimmy your feet into your shoes as you're beginning to ride. And so it's just all done in one motion. You don't stop and then throw your foot over and you mount your bike and then dismount your bike while you're going as fast as possible. And it saves time in triathlon. Yeah, so I looked up what it was and I was like, yeah, I'm going to learn how to do that, but not yet. And here I am, like almost 10 years later, and I've never even attempted to learn a flying mount. But yeah, I remember just very distinctly being like, ooh, that looks advanced. And I still think that looks very advanced. Okay, I'm not going to faff about any more on this one. Let's get into the list. I will say a tri-term, and then I will call on someone in our coaching panel to tell us what we need to know about that term. Some of these will go very quickly. Some of these may take a bit of discussion. Most are wide-reaching, but some are tryout-specific. And up first, Coach Joe, number one, what is a brick workout?
Andrew, a brick workout refers to doing one type of exercise immediately following another. As for triathletes, brick training usually refers to our off-the-bike run following the bike, but it can also refer to our transitioning from swim to bike. And I did Google this term just to see where it originated from. And it said that a Dr. Matt Brick coined the phrase when he was training for a duathlon and was referring from transitioning from the bike to run as his brick workout.
Very interesting. We will have to consult our good friend here at TriDot, legendary triathlete Mark Allen. He has a very different origin story for the brick workout, saying that in the early days of the sport, they used to be just killing time, entertaining themselves on their long bike ride, and they would sing "Just Another Brick in the Wall" right before getting off and going for their run. And so they started calling it a brick workout, going from that to that. So is Google right or is Mark Allen right? We'll have to consult with him and find out. Either way, a brick workout is a workout where you do one thing and then another. You do two disciplines of the sport within one workout. Number two, getting a little nerdy here, a little into training design terminology. This is actually number two and three. Elizabeth, what is a mesocycle and a microcycle?
Well, see, I don't know if it grows to like two, three, and four if I add another one into the explanation, but I feel like this is going to help us understand it. So I'm actually going to start with another term here, a macrocycle. Okay, and a macrocycle refers to your season as a whole. And then we drill down a little bit further, and what you mentioned in terms of a mesocycle and a microcycle, well, the mesocycle refers to a particular training block within that season. So like your developmental phase or your race preparation phase. And then the microcycle, we're getting even smaller, drilling down a little bit more, refers to the smallest unit within that mesocycle, which is usually like a week of training.
Okay. Yep. Very helpful. And thankfully for the athlete, TriDot handles optimizing your training within all of those different time blocks. But it's nice to know that that's happening behind the scenes and that that is how triathlon training and endurance sports training is designed. So next one. This is not tri-specific. This is a term across all of endurance sports, to my knowledge at least. Jeff Rains, what does it mean to bonk?
Oh, bonking. We say it, you know, kind of nonchalantly these days, or you kind of worn out at the end of a workout. Man, I bonked in that workout. But I would argue 19 out of 20 times, they did not really bonk. A real bonk is completely running out of that muscle glycogen, that anaerobic glycogen, and you're fully depleted of all energy stores, and your mind is saying go, 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 but your body just physically can't. Your body is literally trying to throw itself down on the ground so that your heart and brain are at the same level, so that blood can get to the brain better, more oxygen fueling the brain, and that you can start the recovery process. And we all know it as maybe the crawl. Sean Welch and Wendy Ingram, I believe that I think it's like 1997 or something like that. But go watch that YouTube video. Type that in, bonking or the triathlon crawl, and watch that video. That is bonking. And when that happens to you, you know it. And that is a real bonk.
Back over to Coach Joe. As our director of Triathlon Pool School, Joe, what is OWS?
Andrew, OWS stands for open water swimming, and that just refers to any of our outdoor swimming. It's my favorite. And, you know, so anytime you feel like it, doing an OWS would be swimming a workout in the lake or ocean or any open water outside.
Yep, OWS. And you'll see that a lot in print material. Maybe you'll see that on a Facebook post where another triathlete will be like, hey, we're going to get together for an OWS session. That means it is an open water swimming session. Next one up, I will kick it to Elizabeth first here to get her take on this. Now, Elizabeth, a lot of people talk about the fourth discipline of triathlon. What is the fourth discipline of triathlon?
Yeah, this one can be debatable because the fourth discipline of triathlon is going to be kind of that fourth emphasis behind the three sport disciplines of swim, bike, and run. Now, this is often referenced as nutrition, specifically race day nutrition. But depending on who you talk to, the fourth discipline could be your transitions, like especially in short course racing where every second matters. It could also be your recovery and kind of that ability to absorb the training load properly to make the desired gains from training. So I think most often if somebody says the fourth discipline of triathlon, they're referring to nutrition, But, I mean, you may need to use some context clues to see if, you know, they might be referencing transitions or recovery.
Yeah, instead. Very well covered there.
Jeff Rains would say the fourth discipline is ranch dressing.
It's that recovery meal that has to include ranch dressing. No, I've heard it, maybe even strength training.
Yeah.
I've heard a few refer that fourth discipline is incorporating strength training on top of the three disciplines.
To Elizabeth's point, if you ask a physical therapist, it's probably recovery. If you ask a strength coach, it's probably strength training. If you ask a nutritionist, it's probably nutrition. It's that next thing that someone would deem the most important thing beyond your swim, bike, and run training. So yeah, great analysis there, Elizabeth, on depending on who you talk to is going to dictate what answer you get there. But that is what they're referring to, is they're referring to kind of the next crucial thing beyond swim, bike, and run to your triathlon training. Now, Coach Joe, moving on, when an athlete says, I need to spend more time training in aero, what are they talking about? What does it mean for an athlete to be in aero?
Aero refers to our positioning on the bike where we're resting on our forearms and the aero bars. And I know we're going to talk about aero bars a little bit later. And that's the difference between road bikes and tri bikes, in that our positioning is different because the front bars that are attached to the front of the bike are different. So riding in those aero bars is when an athlete would say, I need to stay in that aero position for more time on the bike.
Yep, perfect. Well done. Jeff Rains, another bike question here. Folks will definitely see the abbreviations BTA and BTS when it comes to bike setups. What tri terms are these abbreviations pointing to?
That's usually referring to your nutritional intake or your water bottle setup, and that's between the arms or behind the seat. So between the arms would be in that aero position. There's a straw or something inches away from your mouth. Your spare bottles, they're probably BTS behind the seat. Behind the seat is a little bit more aero as your body cuts through the wind and the water bottles are kind of tucked in behind your bottom. So it's the water bottle setup between the arms or behind the seat.
Do people use those abbreviations?
I've never heard of it.
You've never heard of that?
I've never heard that.
Apparently, Jeff Rains and I are the two that nerd out on aero articles, because it is very, very, very common to see those abbreviations when you read about the things people do to kind of optimize the aerodynamics of their setup. Jeff, that's exactly the answer I was expecting. So, Elizabeth, Joe?
I mean, makes total sense. I've just never seen those abbreviations.
I'm glad you two could learn something today. Yeah. Jeff Rains, what are super shoes?
Super shoes tend to be a little bit more aggressive than your traditional shoe. They're lighter. There's a greater stack height and a less dense durometer of that EVA foam. So it's going to give a little bit more squish. It's going to make it lighter. And the makeup of the sole of the shoe tends to incorporate some sort of carbon fiber plate that is supposed to help the efficiency of the runner.
Yeah, at this point, Jeff, I think I see a majority of folks, especially at more competitive events like Half Ironman and Ironman, are wearing a super shoe. Maybe not necessarily at a more entry-level event. Your local Sprints at Olympics, you still see a variety of shoes. But, I love my super shoes personally. Coach Joe, what is a super bike?
So super bikes, I think we're seeing more and more of these at races. It's kind of like how one athlete can outdo another bike. How strange can our bikes get? So it's the super ultra aero. I've heard them referred to as rocket ships. It's where they have an unusual frame type or wonky cockpit or very unusual hydration systems we're seeing recently. Wheels, very expensive components to make for very expensive bikes.
Yeah, and by definition, all four of us on this podcast actually have a super bike. Elizabeth with the Quantanaru PR6, and then Jeff, Joe, and myself all having a Diamond Marquee. So, Elizabeth, you need to get on the Diamond train whenever.
Yeah, kind of odd man out there, huh?
All three of us highly recommend it. Another super cool bike term, Coach Elizabeth. What is an Uber biker, and are you one of them?
Okay, well, let's address that second question first. flattered you ask, Andrew, but no, I am not an Uber biker. Lots of improvements yet to make before I'll be knocking on the door of that categorization. But, maybe another good goal to shoot for. So
I appreciate
you asking. An Uber biker is somebody that just absolutely dominates the biking leg of the triathlon. I mean, their bike is the strongest discipline It's their weapon of choice, and they absolutely capitalize on it. Uber biking requires a blend of very high aerobic powers, a very high VO2 max, really good endurance, and then a lot of strength. So the watts not only generated over, you know, just from a pure power standpoint are amazing, but then that's sustained for the hours of racing. And it's just somewhat mind-blowing how fast these bike splits can be. Uber biker would be somebody that is just dominant on the bike. They are producing some of those fastest bike splits that we see.
Next one up. You can get a tri tattoo. It's actually a very popular way to celebrate your first Ironman finish. But getting a tattoo is not what body marking is referring to. Coach Joe, what is body marking?
This is kind of a sad question, I feel like, because I think it was such a important part of, like, you know, becoming a triathlete is, you know, these short local races. It was always body marking as you arrived. You're nervous. A volunteer would be standing before you went into transition to mark your calf and arm with your age and your bib number. With the pandemic and COVID and social distancing, a lot of that was done away with. And they did away with, you know, those volunteers being there to mark you. They replaced a lot of it with temporary tattoos for those numbers. So, you know, that is body marking. It is becoming a lot less popular in tri races.
Elizabeth James, what are battle braids?
Ah, yes, this is a fun one. So this is kind of the iconic hairstyle. It's become very popularized by Lucy Charles Barkley. And so it is tight braids, often two of them, one down each side of the head, just kind of pulling the hair back out of the way, getting ready for the battle ahead on the race course. So you've got your battle braids in, ready to race.
So a couple more acronyms, and a few folks may have some dark flashbacks when I say these letters. Please forgive me in advance, but Coach Jeff, what is a DNF and a DNS?
Did not finish and did not start. I think the DNF is arguably the most painful in so many ways. Do not finish. Something happens during the race where you have to call it quits and tap out, and you did not make it to the finish line, and your goal was to get that finish on the day. So did not finish and did not start. Did not start could be a number of things. It could be the day before the race. It could be the morning of, you wake up sick. It could be a month out. Something happens to where your training is affected and you're not able to even start the race.
Yeah. So let's get to a happier race day term. Elizabeth, what is a flow state or a state of flow?
Yes. Much happier term here. So flow is kind of like a state of mind that it's achieved when athletes just feel completely engaged in their performance. And in this flow state, athletes just often kind of lose perception of time as they're fully concentrated on the moment. And then this is also kind of associated with really high levels of performance. So if someone is, you know, just dominating on race day, people might say, oh man, they were in like such a flow state. They were concentrating so hard. It just seemed like everything kind of came together for them.
Jeff Rains, when an athlete talks about their zones, as in my training went really well last month, so my zones got harder, what on planet Earth are they referring to?
This happens a lot with my athletes, and I love congratulating them the day that they do their assessment. So we update your zones, arguably once a month, about every 4 weeks, and you crush it and you do great and you get that huge improvement. Good for you. Bask in the glory. Enjoy that celebration for the rest of the day, because tomorrow your zones get harder. So you've shifted those zones up, you've gained fitness, you've improved, you've gotten faster. Now all of your zones going forward are a little bit more aggressive. So the paces you have to run, the watts you have to push ongoing are a little bit harder. So celebrate now, but enjoy that pain, so to speak, as those zones get harder ongoing.
Elizabeth James, lots of athletes are ambassadors for this or for that. Here at TriDot, we have our own TriDot ambassador group. In the sport of triathlon, what is an ambassador?
So yeah, first off, a huge shout out and thank you to all of our TriDot ambassadors out there. We love them. We appreciate all that they do for us, for the triathlon community. And just again, big shout out and thank you to them. So a brand ambassador is someone who loves a particular brand and kind of becomes an advocate of that brand. So in a sense, it's like an enthusiastic fan that is becoming a long-term promotional partner of a particular brand. And as an ambassador, you are an advocate. You're encouraging others to try a brand, maybe answer questions about it. And there's a great relationship between brands and their ambassadors. And the brands will often offer particular perks for being an ambassador, such as like discounts on products, opportunities to be the first to try new products, engagement opportunities with other athletes, staff members, maybe some pro athletes that are also a part of the brand. A really great opportunity both for brands and the ambassadors of that brand.
Coach Joe, when we head to the pool, what are pool toys?
Yeah, you'll hear people talk about, you know, their swim bag and their pool toys. And there's some of the usual ones that we've all used to do swim drills or improve our stroke. Those include hand paddles, snorkel, fins, swim buoy, ankle bands, kickboard. You'll start to see some unusual things I've seen at pools. People using golf balls, small dumbbell. That's a McKeely Jones favorite, one of our pool school instructors. And now we're seeing all types of waterproof earphones, earbuds, which is interesting. But of those, probably my most favorite are the fins. An emphasis on balance and body position in the water is what we emphasize at pool school. So those are a must.
Moving us along, when I started in triathlon, I think the biggest learning curve for me was just kind of learning all the different bike parts and gadgets that I needed or that I could buy. Jeff Rains, what is a group set?
It's traditionally a collection of parts that make up the drivetrain of the bike. So without going into every single piece, it's long story short, what makes your bike stop and go. These group sets are typically brand specific. And so Shimano may not fit or work or talk well with, SRAM and stuff like that. And so a group set is usually brand specific as well.
Continuing our bike part detour, what is a cockpit? And while we're on that one, what are aero bars? Elizabeth.
So the cockpit components include all contact points between the rider and the bike. So we're talking about like handlebars, saddle, pedals. And also in this category are the other essential parts, including like the headsets and the seat posts. Yet, there are some athletes that say that like the saddle and the pedals are not going to be part of that cockpit, and they refer only to the front part of the bike. So we're talking about like the handlebars, the shifters, the aero bars, we'll talk about that, aero pads. So a little bit of debate there too. I always thought of the cockpit as kind of just like the front part of the bike, but there are some people that categorize it as kind of all of those contact points as well. And so then aero bars, okay? Those would be, Joe kind of referred to this when she was talking about being in aero. They're the set of bicycle handlebars or handlebar extensions that are designed to put a rider's body in that low aerodynamic position. So time trial bikes will come with integrated aero bars, meaning that they're already built into the design. But you can also get clip-on aero bars. So like when I was first starting a triathlon, I had my road bike, added some clip-on aero bars, and just as the name suggests, you are able to add those bars onto your existing road bike as an extension to be in that aerodynamic position.
Yeah, so interesting. You mentioned the debate about the cockpit. I never heard anybody talk about a cockpit in terms of all the touch points. I just heard the cockpit be the front end of the bike, which you said. I'm open to that interpretation that all the touch points make up of the cockpit. Because if you think of a cockpit in terms of a fighter jet, that's where the pilot is, right? And the pilot has all of his touch points with the plane in the cockpit. So yeah, I'm open to that one either way. But thank you for that breakdown, Elizabeth, of those parts. Last thing I want to talk about on the bike, and Jeff Rains actually mentioned these earlier in the show, but Joanna, what are clipless pedals?
I think it's kind of a confusing term. Clipless refers to that there is not, the toes are not clipped in as to a cage or a strap or anything on the front of the shoe. It's referring to like a cleat system where we're locking our foot into place and getting better efficiency in our pedal stroke. So clipless refers to no cage or strap that's clipping the toe to the pedal.
Professional triathlete Elizabeth James, what is an age group athlete?
Age group athletes are the hardest working individuals that I know. These are the athletes that are racing in an event that do not currently hold an elite or professional status. So they're out there busting their butt every day.
For funsies.
Doing it for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As a hobby. And the vast majority of races are split into like 5-year age groups. So like 20 to 24, 25 to 29, 30 to 34, so on. And so this is kind of one of those main attractions of triathlon, that even if you aren't competing for like overall honors or like a top overall spot, you can still compete and compare yourself to people in a similar age group.
All right. Jeff Rains, what is a Clydesdale or Athena athlete?
Those are racing divisions that an athlete can choose to partake in or not as far as their scoring. So they're grouped in a category based off of weight is usually what those are referring to. And those weight classifications for males are usually males around, some will say 200, I think most say 220 pounds or greater can choose to race in the Clydesdale division. For females, that's usually around 165 pounds. You can choose to be grouped in those or thrown into your normal 5-year age groups. So they're kind of subcategories, but you're not eligible, let's say, to compete in a weight class division and in an age group division. So you can't race masters and a Clydesdale, so to speak. So it's just another category to race alongside or with kind of like-minded or physically weighted individuals of your same caliber and be awarded based off of that.
Coach Joe, what is a masters athlete?
I didn't know if I should be offended by being chosen to answer about masters division. I think this may change in the next couple of years. I think right now it's technically 40 and above is masters at a lot of short course events. But we're seeing, 42-year-old women, 41-year-old men being overall winner at a lot of these races.
Absolutely.
So I have a strong suspicion that that's going to change over the next couple of years, whether it's raised to 45 or 50. I think we might see a change there.
Yeah, that would make sense. And Joe, for the record, for the most part, what term I gave what coach was entirely arbitrary. So I was not trying to single you out as our lone masters athlete on the podcast to answer that one. So let me give you a non-age related question here. We'll go back to you. Joe, what is a stripper?
Okay, Andrew, I know you're sweet and naive, but have you ever been to a bachelor party?
Not one with a stripper.
So, stripper, that refers to a wetsuit stripper. This was not as popular since the pandemic and more social distancing. But you will see wetsuit strippers who are usually volunteers located right outside the swim exit or in T1 that will assist athletes in getting, we know how hard those wetsuits can be to get off. And so you are looking for a good wetsuit stripper to help you get that off as quick as possible and make your way into transition.
And I think they're calling them peelers now too, to, try to make that more,
correct.
Andrew's calling them strippers.
Yep.
Yeah. The wetsuit peelers will be there for volunteer status.
Yep. Thank you for that update, Elizabeth. You say that and I recall that. I did not recall that when writing this. It was way too fun to ask Joe about strippers. But Joe, this has been so fun just kind of running through this list with you. Let's go back to you 3 times in a row. Joe, what's a Sherpa?
Sherpa refers to a friend or someone that you've talked to about really assisting you and helping you execute your race day perfectly. So they can be, depending on how demanding you are as a human being and as an athlete, they can be responsible for a lot of things. That can be helping you pack, load your bags, check into your bike, transition, your meals, planning. There is so much that goes into endurance racing. And the Sherpa is usually somebody that you've planned way in advance to help you the days leading up to the race and then on race day to make sure that the day goes seamlessly.
Elizabeth James, this is a 4-for-1 special. What Ooh. Is a wave start, a mass start, a beach start, and a time trial start?
Ah, yes. Okay, lots of good stuff here. So triathlon always starts with the swim. However, triathlon swim starts can vary from race to race, and that's a lot of what we're talking about here. And I mean, over time, as you're racing, you'll probably encounter several different starting approaches. I'd say probably the most common format for a triathlon start is a wave start. And a wave start will typically involve splitting the entire field into waves, which are predefined by age group and gender. And so different age groups are often given different colored swim caps. You know, they're given a specific start time. So you might have one wave that starts at 7 o'clock a.m. and your next wave might start at 7:06 a.m. and then your next one might be at 7:12. And so you have a smaller group within the entire field by age group and gender that will begin at a specific designated time. Now, a time trial start is kind of another one of these main start types that we're really starting to see. And here, racers will usually line up, and it's either by a specific race number or just kind of in, you know, any order that they get in line. So a couple different races will do this differently. Some have a designated kind of order for which they want the racers to start, and others it's, hey, get in line. And then once you get to that starting area, there will be a race starter, and they will let a racer go kind of like every few seconds. So it'd be like, you know, racer one goes, 3 seconds later, racer two goes, 3 seconds later, racer three goes. And it's just kind of this continuous flow of athletes. Now a mass start, this simply means that when the starting gun goes off or when that cannon fires, you've got a couple thousand people or however big the event is that are doing the race all begin at once. This is probably, you know, when people think of like a chaotic swim start with just people everywhere jockeying for position, this is probably what they envision. Now for like a first time racer, you know, that's a little unnerving. It's very conducive to getting like kicked in the face, grabbed, really having that washing machine effect from the very first second you start. But I mean, also as a spectator, it's very exciting to see, and everybody is starting the race at the exact same time. And so it's also neat because you know that wherever you are on the course, everybody is, you know, 4 hours in at the exact same point, 17 hours in when the course cuts off. That's the final cutoff for everybody for the Ironman because everyone started at the same time. So now those are types of starts, but we're going to actually get into the location of the start as well. So those organizational structures between like your wave start, the mass start, the time trial start, these can be done from either an in-water start. So sorry, Andrew, adding another term again, which means that you get into the water and then the gun or the cannon goes off. Or as you mentioned, it can be a beach start where you're starting from outside of that body of water. And so with a beach start, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a beach. It can be, you know, the side of the lake. But you start on the ground outside of the water, run into the water, and then begin swimming. So where you start and how you start, there's a lot that can differ for that swim start.
Yep, and they all have their own term, and you broke them down very well for us. And you actually broke them down so well for us, you turned my 4-1 into a 5-1. And so I'm going to give you another 5-1 special here. Elizabeth
all
James,
right, let's
hit all the terms for what we do in between disciplines. What is transition, T1, T2, the mount line, and the dismount line?
So triathlon is a nonstop race, meaning that you go from swimming to cycling to running. And you do this via the transitions. So there are two transitions in a race. T1 is the transition from the swim as you prepare for the bike. And then T2 is how you're transitioning from the bike as you begin to start the run. Then you've got your mount line and your dismount line. So the mount line is when you are coming out of T1. So you've gone from the swim, you've picked up your bike. You cannot get on your bike until you have passed the mount line. Out of the transition area, there will be a line that is marked, designated on the ground, usually some volunteers there that will say, this is the point at which you can get on your bike and begin the bike course and begin the bike leg. In a similar way, you have the dismount line. So the dismount line is going to be that line that, again, is marked on the ground. You must exit your bike, you stepped off your bike before you go into T2 to get your run gear to begin on the run course. So mount line and dismount line are really just making sure that we don't have people riding bikes through transition, and that everybody is kind of taking safety as a high priority at that point.
Coach Jeff, I keep giving you the abbreviations. I'm going to continue that trend. What is an FTP?
FTP stands for functional threshold power. It's the average maximum power you could sustain for an hour on the bike. Some will refer to that as functional threshold pace, kind of applying that to a set distance or time as far as running as well. But that helps establish your zones to get the most out of your power during triathlon training and in your races.
Back to you, Jeff, for another set of abbreviations. What is TSS, NTS, and TSP? And Jeff, I'm going to let you keep this short. We do have a YouTube video on the Tri-Dot Triathlon YouTube channel where Jeff and I talk about all three of these things for a good solid 15 minutes. It was very informative. But for the definitions here, Jeff, TSS, NTS, TSP.
Those are all different types of metrics to quantify the training stress of a particular workout, a portion of a workout. It's kind of takes the whole workout as a whole and lets you know like the stress that it is applied physiologically on the body. And what those stand for, TSS is training stress score. That is a little bit of an old school model. And so we have taken that a little bit deeper in our triathlon training stress. And we call that normalized training stress. And we take into account our TSP, our training stress profile.
Last abbreviation on my list. So back to you, Jeff. What is CDA? And for the folks at home who haven't seen this, it's a capital C, a lowercase d, and a capital A.
Yeah, that's an abbreviation, obviously, and it stands for the coefficient of drag or the coefficient of aerodynamic drag in our kind of triathlon space.
What, Coach Joe, is a personal needs bag?
A personal needs bag refers to the two bags you are given and allowed to use during a full Ironman. One of these bags is for the bike section, and the other is for the run. You're usually allowed access to these bags one time during the race, one time on the bike, one time on the run, and it's usually located near the halfway point, but sometimes a little bit off. Most of the time, I encourage my athletes to have options to replenish nutrition, first aid, change of clothes, change of socks, anything that you're going to need. 112 miles on the bike, 26.2 on the run is a very long way. So there is definitely some supplies that can be put into the personal needs bags for them to use.
Coach Joe, what is drafting and what does it mean for a race to be draft legal?
Drafting refers to your positioning on the bike when you position yourself directly behind another rider, or if you're in a crosswind situation, maybe a little bit diagonally behind the other rider. And this allows you the benefit of reduced wind resistance. It allows you to expend less energy and less effort while you're riding. The rider in front of you essentially blocks the wind, and this is a wonderful thing sometimes. I looked this up, and it's estimated that when drafting, you can reduce wind resistance by up to 27%. But I think, Jeff, you and Elizabeth will agree that sometimes if you are riding behind somebody, it's a lot more than 27% that you feel like. It feels a lot easier. And often groups will take turns pulling. That's another term where the front rider will pull somebody from the back or a group of riders that are in a line behind them. The drafting allows each rider to get a break, not having to exert full effort in windy conditions, and it allows the group to stay together and maintain a faster pace overall. Draft legal refers to races where, this is road bike races, where it is legal to draft. In most triathlons, you will notice that, especially in endurance racing, half and Ironman distance races, drafting is a penalty, and those officials will get you. I got myself a drafting penalty.
It's like the main thing they're looking for on the bike.
And I mean, even if you're trying to avoid it at all costs, it's very difficult sometimes to maintain six bike lengths from the rider in front of you. And so you have to be extremely careful, or you'll get an official to pull up right next to you and let you know that you will be in the penalty tent.
Elizabeth James, what does it mean for an athlete to go full send?
Oh, this is a fun term. This means that you are doing it full throttle, 100% commitment. You're intense, hardcore, all in. You are just going to dominate the day.
Yep, max effort. Jeff, what is an aid station?
It's a specifically designated area on the course where there is aid provided. It's usually drinks, water cups, sometimes
ranch dressing,
food. Unfortunately, I've never seen an aid station with ranch dressing, but it is a chance for you to get aid, help, fuel on course and not have to rely on your own.
All right, Jeff, honest question. If an aid station had chips and ranch dressing, half Ironman distance race, are you partaking?
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, boy. Elizabeth James, what is a race belt? And don't say that's where you store your ranch dressing.
This is usually an elastic belt to which you're going to attach your race number. So rather than having to pin a number to your kit, you can just place it on this race belt. Sometimes it comes with like snaps or different elastics, and it really just prevents you from having to use the safety pins and put that number on your kit itself.
Jeff Rains, what is a PR?
A PR is a professional rancher, as myself. just kidding. It is a personal record. If you get that PR, you have beaten a previous race finish time. Hence, you've got that personal record, and you are faster now than you were before.
Elizabeth James, what is a taper?
A taper is going to be where you reduce your training load to kind of recover and rest up before a big race.
All right, entering the back portion of the list where I intentionally kind of grouped a lot of our tri terms together. We're going to end our main set with a couple of these. Coach Joe, what is a unicorn, a ponycorn, a pegacorn, and a narwhal?
Yes, Andrew. Tri-Dot awards our athletes some beautiful, exceptional rewards when they score well on workouts. So a TrainX score of 100 on a bike or run session will get you a unicorn. On a zone 2 easier bike run, you'll earn a ponycorn for a perfect effort following instructions. A pegacorn comes from 3 perfect sessions in a week where you have followed your zones and scored a 100.
It's like a turkey in bowling.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then finally, a narwhal is to score a perfect score on a swim.
A little trivia. I've never gotten any of those because I have not really been doing
it. They were implemented after. Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. I have not done steady triathlon training since those were launched. Coach Jeff, what does it mean to parent a workout?
Greg Perrin is an Uber cyclist, an Uber biker that EJ referred to. His greatest and strongest discipline is the bike. And that's a term that Tri-Dot Nation has coined organically and through our social media page. And Greg Perrin is someone who Uber rides a traditional Tri-Dot bike workout and accumulates way, way, way too much training stress. And so he crushes it and Uber cycles the bike. And if you've Perrin'd that workout, then you've pushed way harder than Tri-Dot prescribed. And it's a shout out to Greg, who we all know and love.
Yeah, Greg is one of our longtime ambassadors, and he posted so often about these epic bike rides he was doing that were way over the prescribed amount of bike training he should be doing, that it became the term we all used for overcooking your workout, whether it's swim, bike, or run. Elizabeth, what is a TrainX score?
So TrainX, or training execution scores, let you know how well you are executing your training. So TrainX scores are provided for individual sessions and kind of each training week as a whole. And the goal here is not necessarily for, you know, hundreds on every single workout or perfection. I mean, that would be fantastic, but probably just not realistic. So it's a way for you to kind of get some objective feedback about how you are doing on each session and just trying to do it to the best of your ability to really adhere to one of kind of our phrases that we've talked about often on doing the right training right.
Jeff Rains, what is ENORM?
E-norm is a term coined specifically trademarked for us here in Tri-Dot Nation. It stands for environmental normalization, and your pace and power zones change throughout each day as the weather changes in your area. It's the beauty of what we do so that you don't train too hard or too easy, and it takes the environment, the heat, humidity, and elevation above sea level into account when prescribing your paces for that day and race.
Joe, what is physiogenomics?
Tri-Dot uses AI, artificial intelligence, big data, to use your DNA training data to optimize your training. Physiogenomics analysis includes detailed results of more than 24 genes directly linked to these categories. The categories it's looking at are recovery, aerobic potential, and injury disposition.
Elizabeth James, what is a B2R factor?
I love this. I'm so glad that you included this one on here.
You are welcome.
So B2R is the bike to run factor. And this is a triathlon training data point. And this is used to determine what type of focus will best contribute to your kind of overall triathlon performance. So the data point is relative to the strength of the athlete's bike ability to their run ability. So your overall B2R factor ranges from a negative 10, which would be the strongest bike focus, to a positive 10, which would be the strongest run focus. And there's three parts that are taken into consideration here. So performance difference, like how well you do on the bike versus how well you do on the run, your sport age in each discipline, how long you've been biking, how long you've been running, and then the functional threshold heart rate in each of those disciplines that also gives insight into like how intense the athlete's bike and run threshold abilities are relative to each other. And all of that to say, it really helps determine, does this athlete need to focus more on the bike or on the run in their training to get like their best overall triathlon performance in their next event?
Yep, very well said. Thank you, Elizabeth. Coach Jeff, what is the race prep phase and the development phase, and how are those two terms different from what people will see outside of Tri-Dot in the marketplace, the term base phase?
Yeah, race prep, I call that the stamina phase, and then the developmental phase are phases of your training throughout the season specific to the Tri-Dot platform and our data-driven training. So the base phase traditionally is a lot of volume, zone two, but largely the data and how we prescribe the training season, that macro cycle, as EJ referred to earlier, that season planning is largely inverted now based on the data and how that data drives our training. So the developmental phase is arguably the first part, the first half, or even more. I'd argue just hypothetical, it's different for everybody, but that developmental phase is the biggest portion of your season. You're developing the functional threshold first so that later on in the season you can add safe stamina around that and build that safe volume because you have the strength to handle some of that stamina that is added later on as you build duration and volume as you get closer to those long course races.
All right, and suite number 66. And honestly, by the time, I think along the way we added a few, but I wanted to end with this one. Coach Joe, what does it mean to bump the dot?
We're over here bumping dots. Just kidding. So, Tri-Dot athletes each have a swim dot, a run dot, and a bike dot. That is a scoring from 1 to 100, which ranks their assessment performances against athletes of their same gender and age. But bumping the dot is a term we use, and we encourage our athletes, we cheer them on when they're doing an assessment and they've improved their pace on the run or swim, or their power output or pace on the bike, you know, and when they've made that improvement, they will see a jump in their bike dot or swim dot or run dot, and we tell them that they've bumped the dot. So we do see that hashtag out there on social media, you know, bump the dot, and we encourage them, and it's just it's a fun way we can to encourage them and show them that they're doing fantastic.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
It's Coach Cooldown Tip Time, and I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm.
Our TriDot coach joining us today is Brock Walaska, and let me tell you, he is a total legend. Brock is a commander in the United States Navy, serving on active duty as a supply officer. He is also the type of guy who, for his 40th birthday, dreamt of riding around the island of Sicily, which has a sum of over 630 miles, or 1,000 kilometers, and just under 30,000 feet, or 9,000 meters of elevation. And it only took him 4 days. That is incredible. It is apparent that Brock likes cycling in any form, because he has ridden 313 miles on a triathlon bike in 24 hours, and he's also completed a 400-mile ride on Zwift in 24 hours. But Brock does normal things too. Like, he recently was classified as a Boston Marathon finisher. He sat on the age group podium at Clash Daytona and represented USA in the ITU Long Distance World Championship in 2018. On the coaching side of things, he is an Ironman U certified coach, TriDot and RunDot coach, pool school instructor, a certified personal trainer, and a sports nutrition coach. He coaches athletes from beginner through to competitive age groupers across all distances. Brock currently lives in Florida with his wife of 21 years, two teenage boys, and two golden doodles. Welcome to the show, Brock.
Thank you, Vanessa. Excited to be here.
Okay, now I think you need to explain something to me. So I've heard that you have Everested on Mount Etna on the bike and half Everested two times while running. What does this Everesting actually mean?
Sure. So the concept of Everesting is fiendishly simple, yet brutally hard. So you basically pick a hill, anywhere in the world, and you ride your bike or you run continuous repeats of that hill in a single activity until you accumulate the equivalent height of Mount Everest, which is 29,032 feet or 8,848 meters. So for example, if you have a hill that has exactly 1,000 feet of elevation gain, you would go up and down that hill 29 times to reach the accumulated total of that 29,000 feet of elevation. There's actually a website and really a community dedicated to Everesting with rules, guidelines, Strava segment calculator to determine how many repeats you have to do on any given hill to successfully Everest. After you complete the activity, you submit the Strava data. And of course, if it's not on Strava, it didn't happen.
Yeah, right.
And once it's verified, you are added to the Everesting Hall of Fame. To date, there's just under about 25,000 people from 112 different countries who have completed some form of this challenge.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Wow. And so you've done this once on your bike, and then you've half Everested while running as well.
Yeah, a couple different times. As far as my experience, my first was actually on Zwift. So if you live in a flat area, you can do a virtual Everest, basically the same rules. You just pick a hill on Zwift. I chose the Innsbruck Comm for mine, and then you ride repeats. If you successfully complete it, you gain an entry into the Everesting Hall of Fame, and you also earn an achievement badge within Zwift. You also do it in the real world. I was fortunate to be stationed in Sicily a few years ago, and I did all three of mine on Mount Etna, which is one of the most active volcanoes in the world. For the bike, I completed 15 laps, totaling 177 miles to get to an elevation total of 29,578 feet. And for the runs, I did two half Everestings, so basically half the distance, so a little over 15,000 feet. And you can do that a variety of ways. My first time, I chose a very steep segment in which I climbed a little over 15,000 feet in only 22 miles. And the second one was about half as steep. It took about 50 miles to reach 15,700 feet.
So you know this thing on Zwift where you climb up the equivalent elevation of Everest, and then you get a Tron bike. And I have to tell you, it took me almost like a year to get that. And here you are doing it in 24 hours. That's insane. I love it so much. Oh man. That's great. Okay, so let's go to the coach cooldown tip. What do you have for us today?
Yeah, so my coach cooldown tip is about pre-exercise feeling for training and racing. So if you're going to eat anything before your morning workout or race, aim to finish your meal 3 hours before exercise. This helps to ensure you are able to fully digest your meal, avoid any GI distress, and it puts you at the starting line primed and ready with your glycogen stores full and your blood and oxygen devoted to physical efforts rather than digestion. Many athletes prefer to have a good-sized breakfast 3 hours before the start and then something small like a pack of chews or a gel 10 to 15 minutes before the swim. The real purpose of a pre-workout meal is to top off your liver glycogen stores your body uses during sleep. Liver glycogen is responsible for maintaining blood sugars and fueling the body's work of repairing and rebuilding from the previous day's efforts while you sleep. By morning time, your liver glycogen is low, so consuming things like low fiber, easy to digest complex carbohydrates, small amounts of protein, and very little fat will top those stores off. Properly timing your food intake before each workout will ensure you get the most out of your training efforts and perform at your best. You know you did it right when you feel light on your feet and you're ready for the effort ahead.
Okay, so I have two questions for you about this. One,
sure.
What if you're so nervous that you can't actually eat your pre-race meal?
And that's okay. I would not sacrifice sleep to get up 3 hours early just to eat. Or if you're so nervous and just can't take food in, that's okay too. You have enough stored body fat and muscle glycogen that's more than adequate to start your race and to get you through the swim. You can always take a gel 10 to 15 minutes prior, if that's okay, and won't upset your stomach, and that'll fuel you through the swim. And then you would just feel as you typically would throughout the race to get through whatever distance is at hand.
Okay. Now, second question. Thank you for that first one. The second question is, what is your go-to pre-race meal 3 hours prior?
So I will have a thin bagel rather than the thicker bagels. Some grocers will have a thin bagel, which is probably about a third of the size of a regular one. So not a whole lot of bread, but a little bit with some peanut butter, and a banana. And then, I will have a little bit of the race day fuel that I will use on the course. I use, Perpetuum, which is made by Hammer Nutrition. Okay. And I'll just have a short glass of that. I will say I also have coffee. That's the first thing I do that I get up. It just helps wake up and, you know, have the body do all its normal morning functions prior to race day. Have that meal, and then, you know, once that meal's up and I have 3 hours, just lightly sip on water, but I don't take in anything with calories. No calorie type drinks, just water up until that last gel before the swim start.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for that. That your breakfast sounds like what I would normally eat, not even before a race.
No, I will add, with anything else, you know, don't do this for the first time on race day.
Yeah.
You know, you need to train your body, you know, use training, race day rehearsals to figure out what works best for you, and then repeat that, you know, over and over. And then when it comes race day, it's just a natural thing that you do, as you would for any training.
Yeah. I think, even for race prep, like when you're doing your race rehearsals that are built into your tryout plan, I would probably use the same timeline as well. Like, you know when your race start is, and so I would plan my training for that time if possible, and then wake up 3 hours prior just to get that whole process, you know, like waking up early, waiting the 3 hours, and then getting your training done. Where possible, that would be probably a really good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Just go through the whole morning rehearsal, the food, the you know, getting your kit on, getting ready, you know, checking the tire pressure on your bike, getting the training on the bike, mixing all that type of stuff you need for race day. And it makes things a lot easier when your big event comes.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.